If you meet someone and you have this like really intense reaction, it can definitely lead you to feel like, oh, it's always going to feel that this way. And so like, I really need to prioritize my time with this person, or I need to move my life around for this person. And so it can definitely cloud your judgment and lead you to make not as well thought out decisions in the long run. I know I've definitely made so many bad decisions.
Oh, really?
I can't even. So many bad decisions under the influence of NRE. Yeah.
If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're talking about surviving and thriving in NRE, which is new relationship energy.
Yeah, I mean, we've all experienced this, right? Who hasn't experienced new relationship energy? Whether they're in a monogamous relationship or in a polyamorous relationship, anything in between, new relationship energy.
People who are something that happens. More like aromantic or asexual, maybe experiences it as like a squish, for instance. Like, or people describe it as like a friend crush, which I'm willing to bet incorporate some elements of NRE into it as well in that experience.
So how would you sum up what NRE is? Could you define it for us?
Well, I think the technical term is limerence. I believe that was a term that came out in the 70s or 80s, something
yeah,
like
I think
that.
So.
That feeling of a high that you get when you're first, you know, entering into a relationship with somebody, you know, like the butterflies and the sweating and the like real intense feely wheelies that are coming up in your body when you're around them. I guess from a pop culture stance, like we often call it falling in love, but I think that those words are not quite accurate or adequate. Because we specifically use the term NRE to specifically refer to the period, usually at the beginning of a relationship, that has all these very like intense feelings.
Right?
Is there anything I missed, left out, Emily?
No. I think that that's a good way to describe it. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I feel like the most intense NRE that I ever had was when I was younger. I feel like I was able to, you know, at least know, okay, I know what's going on here to a degree. And it wasn't this like unbelievably new thing in my life because I had experienced it before in some capacity and in a really intense capacity.
Yeah, I have a theory about that, that the reason why teenagers have that, like, it just seems like they fall in love maybe like harder than other people, or like they seem more just like obsessive over it, or like, no, I know this is the real thing. It's because they have no perspective. It's kind of like if you were to imagine with pain, right? Like if you've never fallen down and hurt yourself before, you fall down and you're like, oh my gosh, my arm must be broken because this hurts so much. Because you have no perspective. You haven't actually broken your arm yet to kind of know like, oh no,
what
this
pain is like.
Right? That
I've never broken my arm.
Yeah, I've never broken any bone in my body, so I have zero perspective, knock on wood.
Me neither.
Well, I just have much better perspective. I'm older and wiser.
What have you broken?
My arm and my toe.
And all of our hearts. Many times.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, wow. Oh. Dang.
Well, hang on. I have a theory.
No, we've broken his heart.
Oh,
that's
we've definitely,
what it is.
We've broken so many hearts between the three of us. well, I was going to say, I mean, I think that I definitely felt NRE like so much more intensely when I was young, not just because of the perspective thing, but I guess now that I'm like jaded also, I guess now that I have had more of a broken heart, you know, because I think that when you are young, like you do think like, oh, this is exactly what they talked about in the Disney movies. Like and this, you know, clearly this is a sign I'm with my soulmate and I'm going to be with this person forever. Right. Like, this is what they're talking about, when that's not necessarily the case.
I guess I would just say yes, that, but it's not about being jaded, even though that's kind of the message we could believe. It's not so much about being jaded, but it is just having a realistic perspective.
Just experience, I suppose.
Right, yeah, just exactly. Mm-hmm. Having experience, having, you know, calibrated your meters to like what real life feels like and what falling in love feels like. I do, however, wonder if this might be somewhat extra challenging for couples who have been monogamous for a very, very long time, who are then opening their relationships up for the first time after like 20 years. Maybe they've forgotten what that felt like. And I think that could sometimes like be like, oh my gosh, it's making me question everything about my life. What's going on? And maybe it's just that, like a lack of perspective. I don't know.
Well, it reminds me of a story that they told in Sex at Dawn, I believe towards the end, where they shared like the personal story of this guy who had an affair in his marriage. But it was an affair where like he like really fell in love, you know, got into like super intense NRE with the person that he was having the affair with, you know, and to that point where he thought like, oh, this must mean that this is actually the person for me. Mm. And so he left his marriage and like left his family and like had kids. And like, it was this really, really devastating thing. And then got, you know, pursued this relationship with the person he was having the affair with and found out about 6 months later, oh, actually we're not that compatible. And it's actually not that great. And him expressing kind of some regret of like, I actually was kind of relatively happy in my marriage. Like, I didn't cheat because I was unhappy. It was because like, I got really interested in this other person. And so I think about that also, about how much it can just really skew your perspective. And I think that, yeah, like that's a really common narrative I see, that if you're someone who hasn't felt NRE in a very long time, when it does hit you, it can bring up all these questions of like, oh my God, what does this mean? What does my life mean? Does this mean I need to, you know, like throw everything away and pursue this one person?
Mm-hmm. So for this episode, what we're going to do is look at some of the experience of being in NRE, both the positive things about that and also some of the negative things. And then we're going to look at some of the research that's been done and some of the science for what's actually going on in our bodies during that time. And then in the second half of the episode, we're going to then look at those, and both from taking the science and just the behaviors and the experience of it, and look at some ways to enjoy that to its fullest while also not making terrible mistakes that you'll regret forever, like the one that Dedeker mentioned, you know, or causing trouble in your other relationships.
Yeah. So first, let's talk about what our favorite parts of NRE are, because there definitely are some really awesome parts of it. It's not all bad by any means.
Why don't you start?
Well, yeah, it is like this feeling that you can sort of just do absolutely anything. And like, well, your life during that time is just easier because you're receiving all of these amazing hormones in your body. And so you just kind of feel like you're walking on air all the time. And that's, you know, pretty lovely.
I think it's kind of funny because I definitely relate to that, like feeling like you can do anything. But then the irony is that you actually don't end up doing anything, at least for me. It's like you feel like you can do anything, but the most that you do is just want to hang out with this person.
Yeah.
You know, instead of pouring it actually into like a creative project or something like that. At least that's my experience. It may be different for other people. I know for me, I have a lot of memories, especially like when I was falling into like NRE with one of my boyfriends in college, like needing less sleep, like just,
or at least thinking,
or at least thinking that I did, feeling like I didn't need so much sleep, like having, going from like being in bed at midnight every night, even for a college student. Yes, I've been this boring my entire life. Like going from being in bed in like at midnight almost every night to like staying up till 6 a.m. like every single night when I was spending time with him when I was first like falling in love, and not feeling tired at all, you know, just feeling like super energetic and and, you know, like not flagging anything like that.
Yeah.
And I think I guess it's funny because I feel like now if I fall into NRE now or in the past couple of years, like I think it definitely there's somewhere in my body that goes back to that time. Like specifically, I feel like I'm 22 again. I feel like a Taylor Swift song again.
See, I met Jace when I was 22.
Oh, what? Snaps.
Yeah.
It's you're the tiniest baby.
Yeah. Gosh.
So Jace, you would have been what? 27? 20?
Something like that.
Yeah, you're 6 years older than I am.
28.
Yeah, so I guess I was 28.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So young and vulnerable.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, we've known each other for 8 years, so it's a long dang time.
Yeah.
Yeah, what else about NRE? I mean, having sex all the time, that's always an exciting thing about
NRE.
For
some people, it manifests in that way.
That's true, yeah. Feeling, I guess kind of like Dedeker was saying, like feeling like excited and like Emily was saying, like you can do anything, is feeling more creative. Like it's like, oh, I can, you know, create all this stuff, like write songs or whatever. And it's actually funny that in doing some research for this episode, I did find that there have been some studies showing that creativity is boosted by falling in love, which is interesting and maybe could go to support the idea why, like, all of our, you know, actors and musicians or whatever should probably be polyamorous. So then instead of like having to continuously like break up and fall in love with new people, you could just do all those concurrently.
Yeah, but to be fair, breakups also fuel a lot of creativity. Maybe, it would seem based on pop songs. So because it is either that, it's either the falling in love or it's the breaking up that we like to sing about. So
yeah, that's a good point. Well, okay. So on that note, are there bad parts of NRE? There definitely are.
Oh boy.
And especially, if you are in a relationship, like a non-monogamous relationship, it's sometimes difficult to be as empathetic towards your partner who may be kind of struggling with the fact that you're off a lot or, you know, really excited about someone else. It may just be more difficult to kind of see that and notice that and be there for them during that time because you might be so caught up in all of the amazing emotions that you're going through.
Yeah, and so that's interesting, like that feeling of being able to do anything, it can also like really be a detriment. Because I think it can get you to really overcommit. It can get you to, I think it can get you to feel like, oh, this is never going to end. These feelings are never going to end. Yeah. And to be fair, I think we've definitely been kind of sold that bill of goods by a lot of our media of like, once you actually find the right person, the NRE is never going to end. You know, you're going to feel that way all the time, to a certain extent. And I think also like, because like if you meet someone and you have this like really intense reaction, it can definitely lead you to feel like, oh, it's always going to feel that this way. And so like, I really need to prioritize my time with this person, or I need to move my life around for this person. And so it can definitely cloud your judgment and lead you to make not as well thought out decisions in the long run. I know I've definitely made so many bad decisions.
Oh, really?
Under the oh gosh, Emily, I can't even so many bad decisions under the influence of NRE. And then along those same lines, I it's funny because I feel like actually Shakespeare was pretty good at pointing out the bad sides of falling in love or NRE as well.
Ironically, though, no one looks at that
part
of the story.
Exactly. Yeah. No one looks at that part of the stories, or the sonnets also, like, you know, I used to have a book of Shakespeare's sonnets, and I would like try to flip through to a random one, and like I'd feel like the majority of them are actually pretty negative.
Interesting.
You know, there are some like the really famous ones that we know that are really romantic, but a lot of them are just lamenting like, this sucks actually. Like, like I feel like I've lost my judgment. You know, I feel like both being separated from you and being with you somehow feels terrible at the same time. And I don't understand why, and why do people do this? This is such a folly. That there is a lot of that. And I think that is actually like a fundamental part that we often don't talk about, is the fact that like, you can feel depressed when that person isn't around, or you can feel really obsessive about what they are or are not doing, or like really obsessive about, they said this, but what does that mean? Then they did this, but what does that mean? And then should I say this or should I say that? That like everything just really gets turned up, sometimes in this really negative way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also for non-monogamy, there are ways that NRE can be difficult to manage in your existing relationships. Mm-hmm. So one of these is this experience where, because you're in NRE and you have that kind of obsessive brain chemistry going on, that it's like all of your energy and all of your time and everything is being directed at this new person who's activating these kind of addiction sorts of feelings, which can actually crowd out some of either your energy or your time that you have with your existing partners. So that can definitely cause some trouble in that relationship.
Yeah, and it can also cause kind of like an intrusion on the outside relationship, so it may just be like in the form of a little interruption, like, you know, unwanted phone calls or texts when you're in the middle of a date, perhaps, or even just like sitting around watching TV with your partner, and all of a sudden you get a phone call or a text from your new partner that you're going through NRE with. That can kind of be intrusive on your current relationships. Or just even like spending so much time with this new person, that can intrude and kind of infringe upon the existing relationship as well.
Yeah. So you guys want to talk about some science?
Yeah. Hit us with science.
All right.
Although it's with
old Helen. That's what we call her here.
Yeah.
Right. So Helen Fisher, which many people probably know from her various TED Talks and things like that that she's done, she's definitely the best known researcher today who's doing research on love and the brain chemicals and things that go on. We, as well as many other people like Dan Savage or Carrie Jenkins or Chris Ryan, like a lot of us have some issues with some of the assumptions that she makes about the way people work being very heteronormative and very like the only purpose of falling in love is in order to pair bond monogamously and to have children, and kind of totally discounting same-sex couples or asexual people or, you know, anything else that doesn't fit that mold. But the science she does is interesting. It's just the conclusions that she makes from it that are based on her assumptions that are problematic. So in this study, that's the one that she talks about a lot, is a study done with a fairly large sampling of college students, mostly, who reported recently having fallen deeply in love. And that...
What does that mean? Like, really...
It's self-reporting,
college,
right?
Students in love. Yeah.
Whatever they think that means. But exactly. In the studies, they did find some interesting things by doing like fMRIs and like hormone tests and things like that. And they found elevated activity in, I'm going to try to pronounce these, the caudate nucleus and the ventral tegmental area, which the important takeaway there is that those are both areas in the brain that are associated with the reward system. The reward system being things involved in like addiction or in seeking out food or sex or like kind of these base desires.
Right. So the reward system is connected to having like dopamine injected into your system by your brain, essentially. So the idea that like if you're hungry, you go find food, you eat the food, you feel a little rush of dopamine afterwards. Like that's the pleasure you feel during and after eating. And that like encourages you to keep doing that, to keep nourishing your body.
To keep living.
And same thing with sex. You know, we have like a dopamine release during and after orgasm. And so the thing is that like when you're falling in love with someone, when you're an NRE, you definitely have this surge in dopamine. And that's the reason why it can end up feeling obsessive, because it does become like an addiction. You know, the same way that addictive substances usually cause a huge rush of dopamine, that's kind of what you chase, is that like you're chasing this high and this energy that you get from this new person that you're involved with. There's also some evidence in her research of cortisol, of the stress hormone, being involved. She doesn't really emphasize it, but I think anecdotally, like, definitely makes sense that it also is kind of like we talked about how there can also be this dark underside of NRE that is really stressful and actually kind of unsettling as well.
Yeah, and there was a different study done, Donatella Marazzi.
Yeah, come on, use your Pimsleur Italian on us.
I know, I did. Donatella Marazzi.
Great.
That's as good as I got. Okay, of the University of Pisa in Italy, showed that in 2004 that compared to single people or people in stable long-term relationships, newly in love people, so people probably in NRE,
right,
they showed lower than normal levels of serotonin and also significantly higher levels of cortisol. So that's kind of similar to clinical OCD, which is interesting that was said.
The lower levels of serotonin, because
serotonin is what kicks in to make you feel satisfied.
Sure, right.
It's that, like, that's kind of like.
Damn it. Sorry.
Singing some Hamilton again.
To bring it back to kind of like when I listen to Hamilton, it gets stuck in my head and there's no serotonin release because I'm not done listening to it. And yes. I want to keep listening
you
to it obsessively.
You never will be satisfied.
I'll never be satisfied. Anyway, right. To bring it back to a more reasonable example, like with the food thing, that like you seek out food because you're hungry, you eat the food, you get the dopamine release. And then afterwards, you also get serotonin that helps you know that you are satisfied and you are sated. And then in addiction, that serotonin release doesn't happen. That's why you need more and more and more and more, is because there isn't that feeling of being satisfied. And I guess that makes sense with the clinical OCD thing, the idea that doing an action doesn't satisfy that feeling and you feel like you need to do the action over and over and over and over again because it doesn't actually get satisfied.
Well, serotonin, yeah, is also related to just kind of a feeling of well-being in general. Which is why like a lot of the medications for depression or even anxiety are affecting serotonin, either by synthesizing it or by stopping your body from reabsorbing it so that more of it stays in your system and is more freely accessible. So it's a pretty big deal hormone, and it's not just with all of these, they're not just like a more is better or a less is better kind of thing. It's finding a balance, right? So I thought this was really interesting, that study there kind of, that they had previously, years before the Helen Fisher study, had seen this thing with cortisol being higher, meaning like that we're more stressed. I thought that was really interesting. And then also to go along with kind of the making bad decisions thing, there was, Andreas Bartels of the University College in London did a study that showed with, in newly in love people, and they also did the same study with mothers looking at their children.
Oh, interesting.
They found that the neural circuits of the brain, what they were looking at was not what like hormones were happening, but what areas of the brain were being activated, or more importantly here, being deactivated. And they found that the neural circuits of the brain that are associated with critical social assessment are suppressed. Like essentially looking at
the person that they love,
or at their child, the parts of their brain in charge of like being critical of someone socially,
interesting,
is actually suppressed.
Or in the case of some of our mothers, it's heightened.
Well, your mom might be a special case.
Maybe once we hit puberty, then it gets heightened.
Maybe.
But when you're a baby, less so.
But yes.
Right. But this is basically showing that there is also some scientific backing to the idea that we'll overlook faults in someone that we're in love with.
Why it's a mother's love.
That's why they say that.
Only a mother can love that.
Yeah.
Human. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So this is like the whole package that you're dealing with NRE. And it seems like it brings some good stuff, but also brings a lot of potentially troubling or some potential some pitfalls for sure.
Either problems that you'll have later on once it wears off, like if you've made some bad decisions, or problems in your other relationships, even with your other friend relationships. Like we've talked many times on this show about something that I think is familiar to anyone, whether they've been non-monogamous or not, is, you know, a friend or yourself falling into NRE, falling in love with someone and then just dropping all their friends, like never seeing them again because they're so laser focused. They're so obsessed over this person.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMale.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store, and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, M-U-L-T-I, at adamandeve.com, adammail.com, or evestoys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast, and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code M-U-L-T-I. Okay, so there's definitely a part of NRE that's like a little bit out of your control, right? Because it's like you meet someone and like sparks fly and, you know, you have these feelings come up and it's definitely not going to do you any good to just try to like tamp it down or pretend it doesn't exist, or definitely not to like deny to your partners that it exists or anything like that. Like, it's going to behoove you to still like take care of yourself and still be aware of it. But there are things that can help you balance out like that extreme kind of hormonal chemical rush that you're going through. And the first one is that because when you're in NRE, science shows that you have this extreme rush of cortisol, that you're actually more stressed. There are a lot of things that you can do to help lower your cortisol. And a lot of them are just the normal things that we know about for lowering stress. The first one being get enough sleep. And I know if you're like me, you think that you don't need any sleep when you're in love, but you do.
You really do.
I know it's so fun to stay up till 6 a.m. with your new beloved, but get some sleep.
Just fucking the night away, but no, go to bed.
I mean, that's fun occasionally. Just make sure you make up for the sleep, you know, exactly, the next day. Yeah, don't like fuck the night away and then get up for a 7 a.m. brunch.
Whoa. No, that's the opposite of what brunch is. That's breakfast.
Okay, sorry. 7 a.m. real early breakfast.
There you go.
Another thing to do, which is another one of Dedeker's favorites, is to go off and meditate. You can walk and meditate, or you can sit and meditate. You can use the, what is it? What's that app?
Headspace.
That's the one.
It's the hot app all the kids love.
Well, there's also Calm. A lot of people like that one. Yeah, yeah.
Really?
There's a number of them now.
Yeah. Or you can just download a meditation timer and just do it. I'm kind of old-fashioned in that way.
Yes, well, not everyone is as good at meditating as you are, Dedeker.
Jeez, it's not a competition, jeez.
Professional meditator. Yeah, also, apparently exposure to sunlight, which, you know, get that D, get that vitamin D.
get the actual vitamin D, not that kind of D. Oh,
yes, the vitamin D, not the other kind of D, which you may be getting, I don't know. But yeah, it apparently that helps lower cortisol, which is really interesting. Mm-hmm. I think maybe just because you're so tired after being in the sun all day. you gotta go to bed.
Yeah, this is a funny one. It's this one is tied to like seasonal affective disorder. You know how like people will buy like the light boxes to get, you know, super bright.
If you're in a place not like LA where during colder seasons it's actually kind of gloomy and dark and
like
gray.
Where Jace is from.
Yeah, like Seattle.
What's interesting about it though is that even in sunny places, we still, because we're indoors most of the time and we're told so much to be afraid of being in the sun, that we actually will spend very little of the day compared to what our ancestors would have for almost all of our existence as humans, except for this tiny little blip that's happened since we moved into cities and had electric lights. But specifically being brighter than 1,000 lumens is something that we rarely experience indoors. Like, that's very unlikely that you're ever...
And just to give me perspective, is brighter than 1,000 lumens, is that just like a typical sunny day? Like a not cloudy
So even
day?
Even a cloudy day is still...
Isn't
I mean, if it's like super cloudy, it might be a little bit darker than that. But even if it's like a little bit overcast, that's still going to be brighter than inside.
So I was told by a doctor...
I'm Dr. Doctor.
Yes, I was told by a doctor that even just being out in the sun for 10 minutes is enough. So like for people who like me who are afraid of being in the sun and don't want to burn, like I was told that 10 minutes is enough to stimulate like enough vitamin D production. Like you don't need to be out for a super long time. We need to double check that. But it was a doctor. She really was a doctor in a professional setting telling me this. So
I feel like I've had a doctor who told me half an hour actually was better.
So let's split the difference. We'll call it 20 minutes.
What's interesting about this one, though, is that this is not just about the sun being on your skin. This is more about your eyes seeing that bright of a light. So you could still be in the shade or something, but it's just like being exposed to that level of light. Like maybe go sit on your porch, and read a book or, you know, something like that. But that can actually help. Yeah. I thought that was a cool one.
Nice.
Another one is to actually have fun. So something that I've found, I don't know if you two have, but you know, when you're in that NRE and you're just like every waking moment you want to spend with this new person who you have all these feelings for, but you also have to work and you have to sleep and like maybe you have other obligations. And so you end up in this situation where I'm with this person getting my dopamine fix, or I'm working or sleeping
with my other boring
or doing
partners.
Chores, right. Or like not doing something fun. Or, I mean, I know you're being a little sarcastic, but if it's like I come home and don't do fun things because I'm exhausted from all the fun I'm having with this new partner, that actually prioritizing having fun, whether that's for you personally, like making some time to like
to
maybe
go to
not,
Disneyland.
Well, geez, I guess so.
If you want to, why not?
But you know, like reading a book or watching a movie or playing a game or going and seeing your friends, like doing stuff like that, that's not just with this partner and then just doing mundane things all the rest of the time.
Interesting. I guess that makes sense that would like also prevent you from building up like a weird association of like, I only have fun and can relax like when I'm with this new partner, my quote unquote Disneyland relationship, and then the rest of my life is just like a terrible drag.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And then one of my favorites here is to pet a pet.
any kind of pet?
You know what? The study was done with cats and dogs. I don't know if it would apply to like any furry animal.
Maybe
like
let's
if you have a bunny rabbit.
Maybe let's say like an animal who would
yes. Definitely pet a bunny rabbit.
But this one was cool. So this study, people, you've probably heard some mention of this before, but they've found that petting an animal will lower your blood pressure, but it will also lower your cortisol. And double bonus, it also lowers the cortisol for the animal. So it's kind of a win-win for the two of you. And what's fun is that they actually found the reduction in cortisol is actually even greater if you're not a pet owner yourself.
Huh.
Like getting to pet an animal.
Is it because it's like novel?
Well, that's the thing is maybe. It's like, is it that that's greater because it's novel, or is it that the people who own pets are already experiencing some of the benefits? And so for them, like the little extra benefits, not as much as someone who's at full stress capacity. And then
so
pets an animal,
so the takeaway being that regardless, anytime you feel like you have high cortisol, if it's NRE or just normal day-to-day stress or whatever, definitely go ask to pet other people's pets.
Yep.
Okay.
Totally.
Love it. I can totally take that away. Love
totally.
It. For sure. I love this podcast.
No problem. So something to help actually boost your serotonin levels are supplements. There's a lot out there. Stuff like saffron, which I've heard is actually pretty expensive. I know it's expensive
when, you buy
when
it
it's
as
put
a spice.
On like food.
Yeah. If you buy it as a spice, I don't know what the supplements are like.
Yeah, actually, that's one I haven't looked into, yeah.
Maybe it's just the spice, but yeah, the spice can get pretty pricey, but 5-HTP, which heard about that in regards to a couple things, but yeah, 5-HTP for sure. Vitamins B6 and B12. All you vegans out there, you get that B12.
Yeah.
And then also folate, yes?
Yeah, no, I was going to say there's another one that I was just reading about that... is not as well known. It's called an ashwagandha. And it's a like a root of some sort. But like the extract of this has been shown in studies to increase cortisol levels when taken just like a little bit in the morning and the evening.
Interesting.
So that might also be something to look into. I haven't actually taken that one myself.
Increase serotonin levels?
Sorry, yes. Increase serotonin.
Okay.
Feeling more satisfied, lowering anxiety, lowering stress, stuff like that is also maybe, you know, it's one of these sort of people like to say it'll cure everything. But the studies I read about were specifically about cortisol and serotonin. They would help lower stress and also raise your serotonin.
Okay. Cool. So those are kind of all our science-y things that you can do in order to kind of help balance out the issues that may come up, like from a more chemical level when you're falling in love or in NRE with someone. But let's talk about like external behaviors more so.
Okay.
So first of all, like we talked about at the top of this episode, that when you're in NRE, it's definitely more difficult for you to empathize with, let's say, like a partner of yours who's maybe having a hard time, whether that's them having a hard time with you being in NRE or having a hard time with any other things. Like, because you're so laser focused, it becomes really hard to tap into that empathy. And first of all, just having an awareness of that really helps. Mm. Like, just recognizing that during this time period, your ability to empathy may be compromised. And so you're probably going to need to overcompensate a little bit more than maybe you normally would. That means maybe checking in with your partner a little bit more, maybe verbally affirming their feelings a little bit more, affirming that you hear them or that you understand how they could feel this particular way. And I think kind of like a tip that we've talked about on a previous episode, you know, if a partner shares with you, you know, maybe they're like, oh, I don't know, like I feel neglected because you've been out of the house so often, going on so many dates with so-and-so, that like maybe it's not wrong for you to be going on dates with so-and-so, but for you to mirror back like, oh, I totally understand why you would feel that way then. If it feels like I'm always gone, I totally understand how you'd feel neglected. So being able to use that kind of language to really be able to affirm and empathize with your partner's feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, to make sure that you're not just being like, no, 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 that's not the case.
You're not invalidating their concerns.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Another one that we love to talk about is don't sign anything in the first year. Don't make any major life decisions. As we've seen, your ability to look at them critically is compromised, as well as like these feelings of addiction and euphoria when you're with them. So when we say don't sign anything, we mean don't sign like a marriage contract, a cell phone plan, a lease. Don't even like make plans to sign those things. I should clarify even further. Just don't do it. It can wait, right? If you believe in true love, then as they say, true love waits to sign leases.
Right. Don't adopt an animal together.
Right.
Oh, like, yeah.
You know,
involves having to sign legal documents.
Yeah, don't put your signature on anything connected to this person within the first year if you can help it. And that applies to major life decisions also, like choosing to move across the country to live in the same city as like this person you just met a month ago. Maybe not a great decision. Maybe it'll turn out after a year that like, oh, actually, we are really compatible and I would love to move there. But like, maybe not so much in the first month.
Right. But it's this thing of like, if you don't go yet and then you find out, you know, more than a year later, it's like, yeah, we really want to do this. Then you can do that with confidence and it's still okay. Whereas the other option, if you do it and then realize it's not going to work out, you've really screwed yourself over.
Right.
Totally.
And then the next one that's kind of related to this is to listen to the people around you. And this is your family, your friends, your other partners. You can take it with a grain of salt, but pay attention if other people are picking up on things about this new partner that you might not be. Right? If they're sort of like, I don't know, like they seem just kind of shady, or like they were weird that they didn't want to be friends with me at all or even talk to me, or right, whatever it is, again, take it with a grain of salt because everyone has their own baggage coming into it, but still listen.
But again, like, your ability to be socially critical is really inhibited.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's nice to have somebody to have a little bit of a perspective where you may not be able to. And also journal about your experience. This is something that's really cool to look back on potentially later on, but also to sort of be able to like write down all of the great things that you might be feeling and that might be happening, but also maybe some of the things that are potential red flags, anything that comes up that you're like, I don't know why they said that. What do I actually think about that? Let me like take the time to write it out instead of just being in front of them and like having all these emotions come up. I think it gives you a little bit of distance from them and allows you to sort of write it down and have like a different method of figuring that out. And also regarding the displacement stuff, with other partners, just make sure to create really intentional date time and really intentional quality time for your existing partners. Also, like, you know, look cute for them too, like shower and shave, put on some makeup, look awesome. You know, if that's something that you're into, just basically make an effort for them, because it may seem as though you're only making an effort for the new partner, but instead also, you know, show that you care about your existing partners.
Yeah, I have to say all the time what I see working with clients is I see, like, especially with people who live together, that this comes up a lot of, like, I see my partner, you know, get ready and shave and get all nice and fancy and put on cologne and, like, head out to his date. And then I just get, like, normal t-shirt and sweats version of him. And, like, he never puts in that effort for me. And then on the flip side, often with, like, newer relationships or newer partners of someone, like, someone who's in a relationship with someone who lives with another partner, they often complain about the opposite of, like, yeah, we go out on dates and we have a good time, but, like, I don't get any of that, like, day-to-day stuff. Like, we don't go grocery shopping together. We don't get to just, like, hang out on the couch and chill together. We don't, you know, and so
the grass is always greener, is what you're saying.
Completely so. So I always encourage people to just bear that in mind and, you know, do a little fromanship, relationship anarchy style kind of thing and kind of try to balance that a little bit. Like, what are the things about, like, day-to-day kind of bonded existing relationship energy that you can bring to your new relationships and also vice versa? What are, like, the efforts and, like, the ways that you get excited and, like, the little things that you do when you're in the thick of NRE that you can bring to your existing relationship as well. If you haven't talked with your partner about this already, or your other partners about this, have a conversation about texting etiquette, about how you feel. I mean, I feel like, at least anecdotally, most people that I know, like, are totally understanding and willing to have agreements around, like, okay, well, if we're on a date, then we're, you know, going to be polite and, like, not pay attention to our phones or not be glued to our phones, or if we're having dinner or if we're trying to get the kids to bed or something like that. Like, there's definitely specific times where we agree, like, we'll just be kind of focused here. But just have that conversation about what actually makes you comfortable and what doesn't. Some people are more comfortable with, like, you know, if we're watching a movie, like, I'd rather that we're not on our phones. Other people are like, no, that's fine. You know, if we want to be, like, looking at our phones occasionally and texting people, other people are more comfortable with the idea of, you know, just if you feel like you need to call someone, just let me know and then step out and then call them. So any kind of solution can work for you. Just make sure that you have that conversation with your partners, or, like, especially if it's a partner that you live with. And then also something to bear in mind is that, like, if you have a partner who's having a hard time with you being an NRE, it is okay if the best that person reaches right now, your partner, is feeling kind of neutral about this new relationship. We've talked
and
a lot.
I think that's also just, like, in general.
Yeah, we've talked a lot on this show about compersion and about, like, how compersion is great, but it's not necessarily something you need to be aspiring to at all times. Especially if you have a partner who's historically, like, kind of struggled, but if they've reached a point of feeling, like, neutral or positively neutral, like, that's something to be celebrated, and that's a really good thing. Because I think, like, slamming your partner for, like, not being supportive enough or not giving you the high five can definitely really backfire and cause the opposite of what you want. Like, it's probably not going to encourage them to be more supportive of you. So that's just something to bear in mind, is, again, connecting back to the empathizing thing, is just have some compassion for that and to also celebrate kind of the small victories there.
Yeah. And to go back to the cell phone thing for a second, like the texting thing, I think that having those conversations about, you know, your agreements with your existing partners is super important. And, like, Emily and I did this, you know, years ago when we were living together, of kind of having to try different things. Be like, well, maybe it's, if you're going to text, just do it all kind of in a block of time and be like, I'm going to take 5 minutes to send some text messages and then I'm back to not checking and kind of have, like, periodic checks. Or other times it was like, I'm fine with you texting while we're watching TV together, but actually don't lean your phone away from me so it doesn't feel subconsciously like you're keeping a secret from me. Or, right, like, different things like that. And just sort of try things and see what works for you. There isn't just, like, an answer of, like, this is correct etiquette. You'll get different answers from different people. But just have that conversation ongoing and work together. And then the other part of that is have conversations with the new partner, also setting some reasonable and sustainable communication practices. So what I mean by this is that often when we're in that NRE, even if it's not in a polyamorous context, you might be like, I want to talk to them every second of every day. And so I'm staying up late texting with them, or I'm like sneaking away at work, or like sneaking text messages to them. And while you might be able to get away with that for a little bit of time, it's not actually sustainable, because you do mm-hmm. actually need sleep, and you do actually need to do your work when you're at work, and you know, all of that. And then also, again, with your partners, it's just, if you're kind of teaching this new person, I'm available at any second and I'm always going to be texting you, yeah. you're kind of setting them up for some disappointment. Or even more so, I think sometimes they might also feel the burden of having to text you that much.
Interesting.
Both of you think you're doing that for the sake of the other person, because they'll be disappointed if you don't. And then, you know, really you're both putting yourselves out. And then you get in a situation where if they do start to put some boundaries in place, then you feel like, oh, well, I didn't do that, but they did. Like, oh, they must not care. You see how you like get yourself in this bad situation right. when you establish...
You don't want what you don't want.
Right. Like you yeah, establish exactly. some patterns that are not sustainable, because then they have to change. And that change can be stressful. It can be difficult.
Yeah. So finally, we know that we talked about a lot of ways to sort of like... tame this NRE a bit and deal with it, but do remember to enjoy the good parts, because it's not going to last forever. So enjoy it while it lasts. Have fun with this free awesome body high that you're getting where you just like feel amazing all the time. Mm-hmm. But you know, be supportive of your partners as well, because it may be a little bit challenging for them to go yeah. through.
And we always have to reiterate, don't sign anything. Like, it's one really of the mottos of the show. Don't
and
sign
again,
anything.
Don't sign anything.
Don't sign anything in the first year. Yes.
I want to get like t-shirts.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, don't sign anything in the first year.
Multi-amory.
Oh, man. So we would love to know what your experience with NRE has been. Is it something you've experienced recently, or has it been a lot of years since you've experienced it? We'd love to hear your stories, or maybe you have some really cool techniques for dealing with it, being able to enjoy it, while also not letting it destroy your life. We would love to have you be involved in that conversation. And the best way to let us know your thoughts about that is to do it with other listeners on this episode's discussion thread, which we have in our private Facebook and our discourse forums. You can get access to both of these groups, and you can join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you could share your thoughts publicly on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can also email us at info@multiamory.com, leave us a voicemail at 678-MULTI-05, or you can leave us a voice message on Facebook. Multiamory is created and produced by Emily Matlack, Dedeker Winston, and me, Jace Lindgren. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anand from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.